Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome back to the It's Attainable Real Estate Investing Show. It is episode number 29. In today's show, we have a guest. Our guest today is an attorney by trade. That's not something you see every day, right? An attorney that turns to real estate. Why? Well, we'll find out today. Ironically, it was his career that brought him close enough to real estate to want to invest in it. He describes that slowly but surely he became passionate about investing in multifamily apartments. He was just like many of you, myself included, had no experience, not a flip, not wholesaling, not even single family homes. You see, some start with these items before expanding or scaling into something larger in real estate. But not him. He studied, saved, found good partners, and remember, with real estate, it's a team sport. It takes more than one person going at it alone. From this, it didn't take him long to then close on his first investment, which he did during a pandemic. And right behind that one, he closed on his second. Let's hear about this journey, how he went from no investments at zero to one and then two. I have some questions about the investments, about how he found his partners, what those partners do, and oh yes, how he closed on this first investment in Kansas while he resided 1,200 miles away in New York City. Do you really have to live where you invest? Maybe so, or maybe not. Let's welcome our guest for today, Yosef Lee.
Welcome to the It's Attainable Real Estate Investing Show, where you will learn about investing, the power of real estate investing, and how to invest in it. Whether you have the time or even if you don't, you're going to see it's attainable either way. And now your host, who always wants to share knowledge with you, Christopher Balkin.
Well, let's start. So you are an attorney by trade. Is that right?
That is correct. Yes.
All right. Wow. So tell us about that a little bit.
So I live in New York City and I work in New York City, graduated law school in 2012, I'm sorry, and took New York and New Jersey bar and passed. In 2018, I took Florida bar and passed. So I have three licenses and I mainly practice personal injury litigation, representing, you know, injured victims like construction workers, trip and fall, or car okay. accident type cases. So more court litigation.
Okay, awesome, awesome. So I get New York, New Jersey, Florida. That's a stretch down the U.S. Border there. Why Florida?
So Florida has a lot of construction cases going on, and I firm thought going to Florida and opening an office there will get us another business. So we're going down. We're trying to open a business. We actually opened an office down there, but that was right before COVID. Shut down and we couldn't really go. So we've been just paying rent for the last year.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. All right. All right. So now, so were family or friends attorneys? What got you into, being an attorney?
Just being an attorney. Well, initially I never thought about being an attorney. I was just going to law school to learn how the legal system works. And, actually, in the beginning, I was going to work for like a UN or State Department, and they said if I had advanced degree, like a law degree, then I will start with high ranking. So that was more motivation. And I went to law school, and you know, reality, I just stayed where I was working and became an attorney.
Okay, nice. All right. Now, I think I read that as an attorney, it brought you closer to real estate somehow.
So to be frank, I wasn't really involved in real estate per se as an attorney, but one time I represented a South Korean syndicated private fund and they were trying to buy New York City condos in bulk. It was like about $10 million worth of transactions. So I was able to watch how the Korean fund was syndicated. They came to the US and buying New York City condos. I was representing the New York buyer side. Okay. So in that sense, yes, I got some taste, but then the reality, the legal and business skill set that I was trained from practicing law it actually attracted my partnership when I went to a multifamily business. So in that way, it kind of helped me to, I guess, expedite my journey.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so I get what brought you into real estate now. So what were your initial goals when you got into real estate?
Okay, so from the beginning, I got into a multifamily because the benefits that multifamily was offering, I couldn't just pass it. Initially, my goal was I set it up in back in December 2019
Okay.
to close my first deal in multifamily, and that was about 10 plus units in 2020. That was my first goal.
Okay.
And recently, I just found a piece of paper that I wrote back in December 2019, and it was actually the goal was by February 2021 to close my first deal. So I
Nice,
was
nice.
little confused there, but I think I was able to make it.
Yes, I think we're gonna learn that. Yeah, you made it. Times two, I think. Now, so okay, so attorney, I get how you kind of learned a little bit about, real estate and that syndicate you were representing. Now, what made you say, okay, I'm an attorney, but I also want to do something else in addition to?
So it all started reading this book, Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad and Poor Dad. I don't know if you read. It's like a Bible, right? We all know.
Oh, nice.
And I realized I was actually one of the rats in the book, right? In the race. Because I was a W-2 employee, regardless of how much money I make, even though I'm an attorney, right? I realized for the first 3 or 4 months of each year, I work essentially for free to feed the government by paying income taxes. So if you think about it, I was really scared. Like, wow, it's true. Like 3 or 4 months out of a year, I'm actually working for free. And I was freaking out. And also, I realized there are many ways to write off tax liabilities, but because I was W-2, I couldn't do that. So that's when I think it, that's when I thought about, okay, I have to either do businessman or some sort of investor eventually so that I could build passive income stream with tax benefits to achieve financial freedom. Because now my job is making an active income. Basically, I trade my time and sweat with money. And we only have so much time, right? We can't forever trade it. So
Right.
yeah, that's when I got hooked up with this cash flowing, a multifamily, passive income. And 2019, I finally landed on multifamily upon investing. After vetting some other vehicles like stocks, I tried some REITs, mutual funds, and realized, okay, multifamily investing is the way to go.
Nice. I'm smiling here because it's exciting to hear these stories. Now, why multifamily? You mentioned that multifamily, you jump right into that part of real estate. Why? What benefits do you see there?
So I will say there are a couple of benefits. So basically, a couple of things like it's a First of all, it's a basic human need, right? We have food, clothing, and apartments, home, basically. So demand is always there because it's a basic human need. And demographic shiftings, like baby boomers are downsizing, millennials are not buying homes anymore. They want the amenities, they want to go to apartment, convenience. Another thing, cash flow, monthly or quarterly checks, it's just coming in as just like dividend. And it's also hedge against inflation. Inflation in general, inflation rate in the US is 2-3% each year. But think about it. When you open a savings account, how much interest do they give you when you put your money in? Like 1%? So
If that.
basically, by saving the cash in the savings account, you're losing the value over time. But as opposed to that, national rent growth is about 3-4%. So it's better than inflation. So that way you can hedge the inflation. Scalability, like obviously having, let's say, 10, 20 single family homes scattered all over, as opposed to managing 10, 20 units under one roof. Obviously easier, right? What else? Tax benefits. We utilize something called cost segregation to have extra depreciation, paper loss, so that we could eventually turn the passive income that we received from the apartment tax-free.
Wow, so income, So you said some income that's tax-free. So touch on that just a little bit.
So we receive rent and then we'll pay whatever expenses and we get the cash flow, right? So that's a passive income. You get the passive income in the end, next year you're gonna have to file tax return based on the passive income. But if the apartment investment apartment is big enough, we do something called the cost segregation. So what it does is it's like an engineering report. The engineer will decompartmentalize the apartment, and then you will recategorize the apartment into a 5 year, 7 year, or 15 year depreciation schedule, as opposed to the usual apartment in the actuality is 25, 27 years, 0.5
Right.
depreciation schedule, right? And by doing so, you're actually accelerating the depreciation upfront with the bonus depreciation. You could have like chunk of paper loss upfront, and then you use that to offset your tax liability, and whatever left over, it will be rolled over to the next year and next year. So that way
Okay, I got
you
you.
can save tax.
Okay, so the income comes in and you have the cross segregation among other expenses. Include depreciation, and because of that, the cost goes down to nothing in terms of taxes because all you have
Yes.
is just the income. Awesome,
Yes.
awesome. Okay, so tax savings. I know we could have a whole hour long discussion just on taxes, so I won't take all of your time and the listeners' time, but we'll move on. So you are right on time there. You are a family man, right? I
I
think I
am.
re
I yes, I am.
Nice. So what is your how so I think I saw that you have two daughters. How old is the family? How old are your daughters?
So they are 8 and 10.
Okay.
Very active. They just started playing guitar, so they're having fun.
Nice. So the daughters are they're too young to know what's going on with the real estate, but in general, how are you balancing like working life, or have they noticed the difference between home and attorney Yosef versus some other time you have to put in, not another full-time job, but other time you have to put in with real estate?
Okay, well, very interesting because I was just having that conversation with a friend of mine who's a doctor, and he was asking me the same question, like, how do you do that? How do you juggle, right? I think I always have this mind of feeling like a little bit of guilty feeling to I think my girls because I can't spend enough time as much as I can, right? Because I'm always busy, I always work, I always have like Zoom calls after work when I got home, and now they know that I have scheduled Zoom calls. Though even today they were asking like, "So, Dad, like how many Zoom calls do you have tonight?" Right? So I guess the way I could balance out is to focus on the quality time as opposed to quantity. And
Good point.
if though it's like 30 minutes an hour, I'll try to just listen to them and ask them questions and try to be engaged in conversation and just to understand what they're going through.
Okay, that's a good point. Quality, I guess, more so dedicated time versus a quantity of time and maybe being distracted with other things. So, all right,
Yes.
nice. All right, awesome. Now, so how did they react when your, I guess, other overall family and friends, how did they react when you said you were going to venture into doing a little bit of real estate?
All right, so I'm gonna start from the beginning. Okay, so, well, including my family, my friends, they didn't understand the concept of cash flowing multifamily investing because New York City is just so appreciation market, right? So all my friends, what they know about real estate is buying low and selling high, make money, pay tax. That's it, right? But then it, to me, it's like, all right, but it's gone now. You gotta find another one. Right, and simply put, all they know is like flipping single or duplexes. So when I told them about the concept of cash flowing multifamily, like you can buy a piece of big apartment together with other partners through something called syndication or joint venture, they didn't really get it, and they were not interested in the beginning. So I said, you know what, I am, and then they were like, you sure these guys are legit? Like, they were questioning, like, you do what? You do mastermind? So I'm like, yeah. And then, so that's when I sort of gave up on trying to convince them what I'm trying to do, right?
Okay.
And I just told them, you know what? Just watch me, okay? I'm not gonna argue with you.
Yeah.
So as I consistently posted and pursued this journey over social media and other emails and all that, they started noticing things, and then they started asking me some questions like, "Hey, Yosef, what is this that you're doing? Tell me more about it because I saw it." So slowly, like that, over the months, they are asking things, and finally, after closing my first deal in back in December 2020, this whole atmosphere was totally changed, and people started reaching out to me. And after my second deal, a couple of friends actually invested in the deal as an LP. So
Awesome.
it was like a win for me.
Wow, so check that out. So they went from questioning it, not understanding it, just seeing people see flips on TV. We all know somebody probably by now that's done something in real estate, whether it was a flip or some type of property along the way. And in TV, HGTV and other shows, DIY, they talk a lot about flipping. That's really like all they talk about. There's no investment part of the business. Every now and then you hear the flippers mention, we'll keep it as a rental, but it's like that's like their secondary option. But ideally, we know that they're probably most of them are probably have some rentals for their investments too. Because otherwise, like you said, after you flip it, at the end of one of the shows, they say time to find a new house to flip, and that's true because now what you sold it and great, you got this chunk of money, but that one chunk of money, whatever it is, probably isn't enough to live on forever. Let alone whatever your other goals are, which such as generational wealth or passing down money to family and kids and things like that. It's not enough. Whatever that number is, it's probably not enough to do all that. And so yeah, I get it, the investment side of it. Imagine that. So they started out, they doubted it, they didn't understand it, and then down the line, they actually came alongside you and became a partner and invested with you. So that's amazing.
So yeah, I felt really great about that.
So are you helping them? They started out and then they were able to learn from you and grow their own wealth along the way too. Awesome. Now, I saw we're going to get into your deals in just a moment, but in terms of education, so I saw that you really felt strongly about educating yourself when it comes to real estate. How do you do that?
Okay, so well, I'll say I'll divide education before I joined a mastermind because I joined one,
Okay.
and after mastermind. So before, I was reading books and articles and listening to the podcast and watching the YouTube videos. All good, right? It's not rocket science, Chris. You know, it's
Yes.
something that if we put enough hours, we all can memorize and know what it means, right?
Right.
But what I was lacking was the action part. So
Okay.
I still believe that education is not taking an action. It's not equivalent to action taking, because to me it was more of passively just absorbing the information. So after I joined the mastermind, the group, it became more action-oriented education. So it came with more step-by-step strategic planning, pulling the trigger, one-on-one accountability coaching, talking to the coaches about how to analyze the deals, and actually networking with a group of highly motivated, like-minded individuals, and starting my own virtual meetups, meeting people, and trying to add value. And the growth was exponential through this
Okay.
action taking. So you see the education, the data being applied to the actual actions, and I think that these two things are happening simultaneously. So I can't really separate education and action because you learn through taking an action as well. So that's why I said it comes before joining the group and after joining the group.
Okay. So the books, I'm taking some notes here, so that's why I'm looking down. But the books, the podcast, YouTube started out there, but then that mastermind group, I think you said being around other like-minded individuals who kind of hold you accountable for, you know, things that you're supposed to be doing or say you're going to do that help you along the way.
Yes, definitely. Critical
Okay,
part.
awesome, awesome. Now, okay, so on to this first investment, because I think that brings us right up to the investment. So I saw that it's thousands of miles away, and I spilled the beans a little bit. I told in your bio when I was reading it to the listeners that it's in Kansas, and I don't know if I said that you were in New York, but that's a long way away. And I looked it up, and it's like 1,200 miles away.
Wow, I
So,
didn't realize.
yes. So, what made you look outside your area? That's hardly, you know, a drive home from work where you saw a building and like, oh, that looks like a nice building to invest in, or that looks vacant, or that looks nice. So you definitely didn't pass it on the way home from work. So what made you look outside your area, far outside your area?
First of all, I think it's mainly started because I was pursuing the cash flowing, right? Cash
Okay.
flow. New York City is not cash flow market. So I was kind of forced to look further away from my hometown, but I had
Okay.
a limiting belief like what if I can't, what if something happens to the property? What's going to happen? What am I going to do? But if you think about it, even though I buy something in nearby state like New Jersey or Connecticut, it's not like I'm going to go there every day. I'm going to have to find somebody to manage the property, right?
Right.
So my second thought, if that's the case, and why don't I just find a property somewhere that the numbers make the most sense, right? So that, on top of cash flow, like desire of cash flow, so I just started looking further away from my hometown. So, and I realized later by education, all the good multifamily famous markets are, Southeast and Midwest areas. So that's where I started looking into.
Okay. Now you mentioned the word cash flow a couple of times. Explain to the listeners, cash flow.
So cash flow is basically the leftover money from rental, right? After you collect the rental, and then you pay the expenses, and also you pay debt services, mortgages, and interest, and the what's left. As we call the cash flow, and a little bit of information about appreciation market. When I say New York City, the cash flow is kind of minimal here, but whereas the property value goes up really high, so that's where people make money. But it's really expensive here to get into the game. So I was looking into outside, and these states, the entry level is really low compared to New York City in terms of purchase price, but the collection of the rents and after debt expenses, the cash flow is pretty good. So that's where I thought about cash going after cash flow, and also it's more about consistency and passive income, because selling the property and making money is still active income. You gotta actually work for it, but collecting the rentals through property managers and let property manager manage the property, paying the expenses, and what's left over is coming in as passive income because well, it's later I'll talk about limited partners, but as a limited partner, you don't really do anything. Like you just put your money in and wait for the cash flow coming in. It's like really passive income.
Nice. Yeah, we got to talk about that. So just you don't have to do anything and you put your money in and the cash flow comes back. So that sounds good. That should sound good to a lot of people.
Yes.
All right. So on to this first deal more. When did you first start looking?
So
Approximately.
I think it was around April or May of last year. So that
Okay.
was right after I joined the mastermind group. Right? They teach you how to select the market. You compare all the metrics like population growth, income growth, house value growth, job, unemployment, crime rate, and all these metrics, and then you come up with certain number of states, and then even inside a state you could pick and choose certain markets, right? So that's how I started looking into the markets, and I picked Tennessee first.
Okay.
So I started looking into the deals in Tennessee.
Okay. Nice,
Yeah,
nice.
around May or April of last year.
Okay, so April, May, and that's 2020 or 2021 now. So about a year from ago from now. Okay, awesome. And so did you have, I think I saw that you have partners in this opportunity, in this
Yes.
investment. Okay, what were the roles of the partners? Like what, tell us about that partnership.
Okay, so when I think about partnership for the syndication, I see a couple of different roles, like someone who's being boots on the ground, local contact, underwriter, capital raiser, someone who's a little more experienced than others who can oversee the process because of the experience. So these couple of roles are I consider as the core partnership member. Doesn't have to be four or five people. Two people can probably take down the roles, or three people can share the roles, but you have to fit yourself into one of the roles so that you could add value through that, because you don't want two Chris's in one team, right? You want
Right.
one Chris, one Joseph, one Jane, so that we could have all value-adding components into the team.
Okay, got
So
it.
those are the main roles I see in the team.
Okay, so boots on the ground, someone there local. Obviously, you're not local, but probably one of the partners was local, I imagine.
Yes, so
Okay.
for now, for the deals that I closed, we have Kansas City local partner.
Okay, awesome. And then. So you mentioned property management. That's usually a company or a vendor, someone local who has maintenance and leasing agents and office managers, customer service type things. They're local, obviously, usually.
Yes.
And then capital raiser. So that's someone who does what?
So when we talk about apartment syndication, sorry, I just keep orienting about syndication because that's what I'm fascinated by all the time. So when we take down the role, when we take down the deal through syndication, usually it's a big apartment. It's like a couple of million bucks. So
Okay.
it's really unlikely that one person has like really that high net worth of cash liquid and pay everything at once. And I don't want that to happen because we want to leverage the bank's money, right? So what we do is we raise capital from our investors and let them invest somewhere from minimum, let's say, $50,000 to $100,000 to maybe $200,000. And that's how we raise capital through our investors and personal relationships. And then with that money, use it as a down payment or maybe rehab cost, and then take down the big apartment together.
Okay, nice, nice. So, I talked about leverage. Leverage is so powerful. When it comes to real estate, there's just really not too many other investment vehicles out there like it. Maybe a business itself, if you were going to buy a business, but even still, banks don't find security in those things like they do real estate. And so in the last show, I actually talked a lot about leverage. So this is right on time. So you talked about like a large apartment building being millions of dollars potentially, but then the minimum investment or investors can come together with whatever they have. Maybe it's $100,000, $200,000, $50,000, but together it's enough not to equal a million, but to equal the part required to close or
Yes.
to purchase the property. Now, this investment was buy and hold, meaning that it's not a flip. You're buying it and you're going to hold it for some amount of time and enjoy the cash flow, as you mentioned, right?
Yes, the first deal we're probably thinking about passing it down to our daughters, like in
Nice.
20 or 30 years.
Oh, nice. So you're going to hold it for forever. Okay. Awesome.
Right.
Awesome.
Because we do different tactics for joint venture and as opposed to syndication. Syndication, because we have third-party investors, it's more it's harder to do whatever we want, and it's also SEC regulated. But when it comes to joint venture, we're more controlling, right? So we could do something called cash out refi, and
Okay.
by using that, we could keep it longer and longer.
Okay. So joint venture, this first one was, and that's so more so a smaller maybe group of investors or partners who have the same end goal in mind because the purchase, As important as the purchase is, the end goal is just as important too, to all agree. So good. So you had a joint venture or a joint partnership on this first one.
Yes, the first one was joint venture structure.
All right. So we'll get into some numbers. How much was it?
So the first deal per unit apartment, let me see, I believe that was 1.7 point, or 1.825. That was the price.
1.825.
Yeah, seller
All
was
right.
asking 2 million.
Ah, okay.
And then I think we're our striking price was 1.825 million.
Ah. And so you must have countered somewhere below that, and they accepted it at 1.8, or they just accepted your first counter.
Yeah, I believe we started at 1.7. I'm not,
Okay.
it's been a couple months, so I'm not kind of
Yes.
clear on that, but I think we started like 1.7 and then we went up to 1.8 or 1.825.
Okay, nice. Now, so I was gonna say, how did you fund it? So you funded it with partly bank financing, and then the partners brought in some. What was the total investment? Not per individual, but what did the total of the investors have to bring?
So we did 80% loan to cost from the local
Okay.
community bank.
Okay.
So we had to come up with 20% of the purchase prices down payment and 20% of rehab costs together.
Okay.
So and we added a little more. So I believe the overall raised amount was close to 600,000.
600,000. Okay. And about how many people?
Six.
Six. Okay. So nice. And so 600,000 per person. Not necessarily that it had to be that,
Right. Some
but
people pay a little more, some people
yeah.
pay a little
Yeah,
less.
exactly. Whatever the group can agree upon. Okay, awesome. Okay. So 80% loan cost. And so you mentioned renovation loan. What do you use that for? So renovation, obviously, is to renovate or repair or improve. What did you use it for?
So this deal is Class C building in Kansas City, Lawrence, Kansas. And as mom and pop owner who really didn't care about the condition of the property. Well, I won't say that, but he was it was definitely maintenance type of property value add. So
Okay.
when we did inspections, we were to find, there were some roofing issues, HVAC system was really old. So mainly our rehab budget were going to be used to replace the roof and HVAC systems and boilers.
Okay, so roof, HVAC system, boilers. So now, what about did you do any improvements or planning any improvements for the inside?
So inside,
The
in terms of
units.
human units, right?
Yes.
Yes. So again, these are not fancy or any improved units. There is a part where we need to work on, obviously. So our goal was to actually turn and improve at least like 10 to 15 units
Okay,
over the
awesome.
next 2 years.
Okay.
So actually we upgraded one unit and we turned two units by now.
Okay.
And then we were able to raise the rent. And it's going well in terms of business plan wise.
And so when you raise the rents, and I'll try to explain it to the listeners, so you go in, you're going to fix all the things that are wrong. You can't have a problem with the roof, you can't have HVAC not working, people won't be happy. Depending on how cold it gets there, it probably gets cold enough to where you have to have heat in that area. So that's a problem. The boiler for heat as well. Now, the improvements, and you mentioned raising rent, so that adds value to the property, is that right?
Yes, so a little bit of more background is the property's average rent for this property is about $150 to $200 lower than surrounding apartments.
Oh, wow.
Funny thing is, we actually this is 40 per unit, right? And there's an exact mirror image apartment next to it. And we believe in the beginning the developer had 88 units.
Wow.
and then probably sold it to two different owners. That mirror image apartment, their average rent now, same size, maybe I don't even think it's more like upgraded units, but they are actually charging 700-ish or 750, whereas our the current average rent is $510.
Wow. And is
So
that one bedroom or two bedroom?
it's two bedrooms.
Two bedroom. Wow. So $200 difference. Just so you could get the rent closer to that market of maybe if that even is market without having to do anything.
Right. So our goal, so we actually tested the market too. We actually tried to raise $50, right? Not doing anything, just renewing the lease, and no one had any complaint. And then we had just turning, no improvement, just like two-tone paint and new carpets. And then we were able to raise I think $100 for that. And no complaint, right? And then finally we upgraded, spent some money, but after upgrading the units, some two-tone paints, not crazy heavy lifting, we changed the luxury vinyl plank, and we changed the door and doorknobs, and we raised $300, and we
Wow.
find a tenant for that. So our plan for the next 2 years is just to turn everything, like 44
Okay.
units, and raise all the rents up to about 700 or 800 market rent.
Wow. And so you didn't have any trouble finding the tenant for the one that was 300 more, so five, six,
Well, actually,
seven,
the
eight.
tenant was already one of the tenants in other units, and they saw the units being upgraded, and they wanted to move in.
Awesome. Wow. So you didn't have to do any marketing. You just
No,
they
no.
That's crazy. That's awesome. Okay. So yeah, that's the slam dunk deal for sure. Because yeah, you can add value to the property without even raise the rents without even having to invest anything besides just buying the building. Now, so explain what do you think the value after you do 10 or 12 units, what do you think the value is going to be? So you purchased it for 1.8 and so 1,800,000. What do you think it's going to be even just after 10 units?
Oh, so I'm just gonna add on to the purchase price. So
Oh.
after inspection, we found that there are some, we told them their roof is really old, HVAC is really old, and plumbing and molding issues, mildew and termite, all that. So seller said he's gonna take care of the plumbings and mildews and termites and all that. So he did. So he fixed it and all that. But then we were complaining about roof and HVAC system were really old. We told him like to fix it before closing, and he refused it. He actually wanted to give us credit,
Oh, nice.
so we ended up getting $100,000 credit for that.
Wow,
So
wow.
actually went down back to 1.7 something, I think.
Nice. So I'm going through something similar myself. So explain the advantage of the, and I had to weigh back and forth on a discount on the property versus the credit. Explain how, like, the credit is different than them just taking $100,000 off.
Well, basically, the difference is whether we let the seller fix it before closing and just pay our purchase price, as opposed to that, or the seller gives us credit, so we pay a lower purchase price,
Right.
and then use whatever money that's left over to fix these roofs and HVAC system.
Okay,
But
nice.
we actually ended up better choosing that route because we don't have to fix it right away, right?
Right.
We could just let it ride as far as it could go, and
Yep.
then fix it probably later time. And especially during the COVID, our business plan was, let's try to ride into this COVID without doing any heavy upgrade, and
Right.
see how it goes. So it kind of helped us to in that sense.
Okay, nice. Yeah, you can take $100,000 and put it into the well, into the units, or let it sit there and collect a little bit of interest somewhere. Awesome.
Right.
Now, so
And
what do you think it's going to be worth after you renovate 10, 12 units?
okay, so I will just stick to our business plan of turning all 44 units because I
Oh,
think it's
okay.
very doable. So if we calculate just raising the rent. Let's just say we were able to raise 150. I think I'm confident we can do 200 or 250.
Okay.
But let's just say for the sake of being conservative, 150, right?
Yeah.
So if you raise 150 of 44 times 44 is 6,600 per month. And
Wow.
if you do it times 12, it's 79,200. And here's the
Wow.
kicker. We consider this area to be like 7 or 8 cap area. So if just apply 7 cap, now, hold on, 72. Sorry, let me just.
I'm gonna do it with you. It sounds
I'm
like an
just running
awesome
my
number.
calculator. Times 12. All right, divided by 7 cap. How much you got?
So 78,000 divided by, that's an extra $1 million.
Is it 900, close to extra $1 million, right?
Yeah,
It's
yeah,
just
yeah.
created just by pushing the rent
Yep,
without
yep.
even reducing the expenses, you know.
Right. I was gonna say you'll have some expenses there, but that's crazy. Yeah, just
Right. And
so you go
then
from
we do
1.8.
cash out refi, pull out all the investment, and
Yep.
we just keep it and roll that money into the next deal.
Yeah, and yeah, 'cause you get you with at that increase, yeah, you get yeah, all your money back out probably and yeah, the return on a $0 investment, but you're getting the cash flow each month is infinite. So sounds like a slam dunk of a deal for sure. What were your predicted returns in terms of to yourself or to your partners in terms of like I guess just cash on cash or return on investment?
Okay. So at this point, just walk in, I think we had about 13% of cash in cash.
Okay.
And after cash out refis, I think they, even though we don't pull out everything, I think our cash and cash return will go up to about 60%
That's
in about 2 years.
yeah, you can't get that anywhere. Even the 13% is awesome because yeah, where can you get 13%, you know, on your potentially the equities market, so stocks, if you can, you know, pick the right ones and stay on the right side of the downturns. Yeah, 13% yeah, cash on cash return, you know,
That's great.
annually is pretty nice, pretty nice.
And we do cost segregation on that, so it's gonna be taxed.
Nice. Yeah, so yeah, and it yeah, so the tax burden is less too. So yeah, we didn't even calculate the yeah, the what the return would be, yeah, minus the taxes or the tax savings. So awesome. Now, what did you like about this? So we know that you did some research, you looked at the metrics, so you looked at job growth and population growth, and you landed in a couple regions. You narrowed it down to two states. Sounds like Tennessee and Kansas, somewhat Midwest area, somewhat. So what do you like about this investment? Obviously, I like that the rents were $200 below the property next door, but what did you like about it?
Oh yeah, that definitely that's given. Like it's, you know, below $200 below market rent, and it's been performing over 90% economic occupancy throughout pandemic too.
Okay, nice.
So the tenant base, I know there are some bad tenants there. Once we took over, we already had two evictions done. And oh, that's another thing I love about Kansas City. It took like I think less than a month for an
Wow.
eviction. Whereas as opposed to New York City, to evict somebody, I think it will take years.
I had someone on a couple shows ago, Nicole, she's from New York as well. And yeah, it took a long time. I gotta look back at my notes, but yeah, it took a long it was it she had said it takes a while there, so
What would you say, Nicole? Is that the
yes.
Nicole I know? Nicole, what's her name?
Yeah, small
Oh, I
world.
know her.
Yes,
We are in the
awesome.
same mastermind.
Oh wow, check that out. Now I did not know that. That's awesome. Wow.
See, we're the
Yes,
players. Just
yes,
kidding.
yes, yes. Yo, for sure. Yes, yeah. She was on the show a couple shows ago, and she talked about her initial investment was in New York, and yeah, like the laws are just not so friendly for investors or landlords when it comes to real estate. So yeah, nice. So Kansas City, it seems like at least for people that don't hold up their end of the bargain. I always talk about that there's two sides. There's you, as the investor, landlord, owner, and you hold up your part of the bargain. You provide a good building. You're going to take care of the roof, the HVAC, the boilers. You give them a nice place to stay. Well, the tenant, whoever they are, should also hold up their end also. Mm-hmm. But when they don't do that, you should be able to have the right to have them leave. And yes, yeah, some states don't make that right. So easy.
Right.
So tenant friendly or landlord friendly, at least in terms of the eviction, the population growth, cash flow. What don't you like about it?
What don't I like about it? I don't know. I didn't find it yet. I'll
okay.
let you know.
Oh, that's awesome. Awesome. I asked it in a form where like there might be something, but no, if you haven't found anything, let's not make anything up. So that's good. Let's not even add anything that could be a problem. Okay. Awesome. So let's get into your second deal, but any parting tips for investors on your first one?
I'm sorry, what was the question? Sorry.
Any parting tips on your investment in your first deal that you would share with someone else or anything you would tell yourself if you were to do it again?
I think finding a deal was the key for this one because we were able to get it off market, sell it direct.
Okay.
And I think that's critical at this moment in time. A lot of competitions out there, many people looking for the deals, but not many good deals out there. What happens is the brokers, they, before putting it out on the market, they will contact in their inner network if anybody can close this before bringing it into the market. So if you just wait until something comes out of the market, you're not going to see these good deals.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one takeaway I could give out is try to maintain good broker relationship so that you could be on the list of his inner circle.
Okay. So find an off market or at least before it hits the public MLS and then a good broker relationship. What now, did you find this one through a broker or direct to seller?
This one was, we found it through one of the local partner's friend who knew the seller. So he worked as a consultant.
Okay.
And then he brought the deal, so we gave him a finder's fee, and then, we were just talking to the seller directly.
Nice, nice. All right, so there you go, finder's fee for anyone that's listening that can bring a good deal. You know what we're looking for, you know what Yosef's looking for. Mm-hmm. So below market rents, Midwest growing markets, so Midwest or Southeast, somewhere where the population's growth or job growth. Yeah. Let them know. Okay, so let's get to the second one. So the second one is where?
So second one is in Kansas too, but it's it's a moving city. It's right near the city called Wichita.
Okay. So the first thing I think of is like, is there any efficiencies there? Is that close enough to, I didn't look at this one on the map, between mm-hmm. the two. Is it close enough to leverage the same property management?
No.
Or, okay.
No, it's about 3 hours away from this first property. So we have different property manager there.
Okay.
But Wichita itself is also, it's a fairly big city. The metro statistic area population is over 600,000.
Okay.
And then from the downtown Wichita, our property is only about 30 minutes away.
Okay. Nice.
And job growth and population growth has been consistent.
Okay, good. Wichita, all right. Okay, so was this one a joint venture or was this one something different?
This one we did as a syndication.
Okay, so tell me about that one. That sounds a little different.
Sure. So syndication as opposed to joint venture. Joint venture, everybody is general partner, so you're going to be liable. But syndication, we have two different groups, mainly GPs. There are sponsored groups. They find a deal, vet the deal, inspect it, put it on the contract by paying earnest money deposit, and they inspect the deal, making sure it's a good deal, and then bring it to the table for the investors. And these investors are called limited partners. They just put their money in and in return for their investment.
Okay.
So these two groups are essentially playing different roles. One group actually runs the show. The other group puts the money in. And whatever money the GP group spends in the beginning to find this deal, if the deal gets closed will be reimbursed by the money raised.
Okay.
So it's truly using other people's money. So that's what the difference between joint venture, because joint venture, you are likely to put your own money, but you only have so much money. You can't just keep joint venturing, right? So at one point, I think I was forced to do syndication, and then to use other people's money. I think it's true wealth creation, sort of.
Okay, awesome, awesome. So syndication, you're bringing in not maybe a small, could still be a small group, it sounds like, a syndication depending on, but it's not you and maybe colleagues, maybe it could be, I guess, but the syndication is there's the two groups, the general partner, you're the decision makers, you have a lot of skin in the game, you're putting the deal together, you're making it work, you're liable, but then there's this other group, the limited partners, who are kind of investing. Sounds like something like stocks where, you know, we can go on E-Trade or call our broker or our financial person, say, I want to buy however many shares of this stock, but you know, I don't have any decision making in that company.
Right, right. What's a good part is you can, as a limited partner, you can still enjoy the cost segregation study benefit, and you get the paper loss, and it will flow through your personal tax income and wipe out your, you know, income tax liability too.
Nice, nice, nice. Okay, okay. And so how many units was this one?
This one is 68 units.
68. So you went up. Nice. And what's the plan for this one?
So this property is fairly nice, B class, in a very nice B area, 1999 vintage. So when we did inspection, we didn't really find anything too distressed or anything. So there was some fence issues, which I think we got some credits to fix it. But other than that, the property itself was very nice. And the area is very, quiet and nice area. Next to it is like a high school.
Okay.
And household income, median household income in Move-In City is like over 70,000.
Okay.
So it's a good area. And, so yeah, the property itself was maintained well.
Okay.
So our plan, business plan for this property is more of hold it for cash flow, more safer deal because it's not heavy value add, but still there these the average rent was about $100 to $150 lower than other comps.
Okay.
So we could still add value through raising the rent, but overall it's very good, well maintained property.
Okay, good, good. And so you'll be able to raise the rents, increase the value, and then either sell or cash out, refi, and return some of the capital to the investors.
Yes.
Awesome, awesome. And how much did this one cost?
I believe this one was over $4 million. $4 million.
Wow. All right, so a couple units more, but a whole lot more as well. So the rents must be a little higher in that area, probably. Maybe bigger units.
Yes.
Okay. Bigger units. Okay.
We have two, mainly about six, I think over 60% of the unit mix is two or three bedrooms.
Oh, nice, nice, nice. Okay, good, good. And for those listening, the larger units bring in more rent. So two bedroom, three bedroom, those are awesome. Three are hard to come by. But so the idea is to usually have a nice mix to where you can have more twos and threes than you have ones, if you're searching. And in case you're searching for deals for Yosef.
Yes.
There you go. Okay, so that's nice. Now the return on investment for the for the investors, how many investors was it?
So far I've counted a couple of days ago. It's about 30 people.
30 people. Wow. So 30 people can come together and buy an apartment building that's $4 million. There we go. Mm-hmm. And the average, or if you were to just take a rough number on the how much did they have to raise for the?
So the raise, raise was 2.1 million was the raise, I think. Yeah.
2.1. All right. All right. Well, that family's calling, so we'll get you out of here in a moment. So 2.1 million, and that went towards the down payment for the property. Was there some renovation in there?
No, actually, like I said, it's a very good property, so no renovation was ever done yet.
Okay. Okay.
It's recently, I think we're filling in almost 100% occupancy on this one.
Wow. Wow. Now,
Now, yeah.
how is this one funded? So, a bank loan, because if the property was 4 million, you put in 2.1. There's a gap of 2 million, obviously. So how was this one funded?
So that's when we did capital raising through private investors.
Okay.
So we did a couple of deal presentation, and through our personal network, we were able to raise about 2 million. We need I think one. We need little lower than 2 million to close. So we projected 2.1 million, but we were able to close with a little less than that. Like I think like close to 2 million.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. And then the bank picked up the other part of it.
Yes.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. All right. Now, I was reading some of your commentary online, and you said you, at least a couple of times, that you just kind of fell in love with the process. And I haven't really heard anybody put it in words that way when in terms of acquiring or buying real estate. So tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. So falling in love with the process, it's one of my mentors are saying it. Because let's say if someone is from single family flipping, right, or quick sale, this person will feel like he's walking in a tunnel without a light when he tries to come in a big multifamily, because it's like really long process and it's a team sport. So you need to like vet at least 30 to 50 deals even to find like one good deal. And then you need to find a partner because you can't do this alone. And you need to pick a market, and it takes work and time. So unless you enjoy the entire process of finding and vetting the deals, meeting people constantly, it is going to be really tough to stay in the game. And
Okay.
I see many people don't get a deal within like 1 year or even 2 years. For example, our second deal, which I was just talking about, it took 9 months to close.
Wow,
From the
wow.
time that we put in the contract,
Okay.
because there's some, ongoing hiccups here and there. So when I say enjoy the process, it's like, just fall in love with process, enjoy it and enjoy the moment, be persistent and patient. So that's why I said just try to fall in the process, not the result, because you don't know when it's going to come.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, so 9 months. Yeah, that is something that you would have to enjoy the process for sure and not give up along the way. And you've got others in the mastermind and your partners to kind of keep you motivated, keep you going, because they're like-minded also.
Yes, that's one critical part of being in the mastermind and very supportive.
Awesome, awesome. Now, so have you looked at any other investment classes outside of multifamily, like industrial, office? It's probably a bad time for retail, probably a bad time for both, but that's only my opinion. So,
Well, not as of yet, because I consider myself still learning phase.
okay.
So I want to focus on multifamily now, but I hear good things about mobile home parks and
Okay.
senior living. I guess those two categories are, I think, good.
Okay. Now, at the beginning, your goals, long time ago, it wasn't so long ago. You started in 2009. You read the books. You got into the mastermind. You purchased the two in investments. So you did a lot in a short amount of time. But have your goals changed since the beginning?
So, well, the goal, yeah, back then goal was to do my first deal. So now I did my first and I did my second, and actually I'm waiting for the third deal
Nice.
to be closed in a couple of weeks. So I would say my goal in 2021 is to accumulate 300 units as a GP.
Okay. Okay.
And then just keep going, keep acquiring, keep learning the asset management side and learning the capital raising side, and just keep going until,
Okay. Awesome, awesome. Well, 4468, you're at 112, so you are well on your way.
Hopefully I can make it.
Yes. Okay, so you closed, last couple of questions, you closed on this these investments really during COVID-19, both of them, and one kind of really in the height of it last year. Anything that have you had to adjust your business at all for COVID? I know you mentioned in the last one, kind of preserving capital a little bit, just in case, because none of us really know what's coming. But have you made any other adjustments to your business, you and your partners?
So I think when we were trying to underwrite deals, we became really conservative extra. So we didn't put any rent growth into the projection for the first like year or two, and just to see if the deal still survives. Because we didn't feel like, because there might be the situation where we can't really raise the rent, depends on the tenant situation. So when we underwrote it, we did it differently like that.
All right. So conservative underwriting in terms of rent growth. Awesome. Okay. Now, why do you think, I ask this to everyone, why do you think most never get started?
What do I think? Most never get started. I think they don't get started because they wait for the perfect timing. Like they're, and then they become spectators. They say, you know what? I'll jump into the game when the market looks better. It's probably not a good timing. But unless I think, unless your feet are already wet in the market, you will never find the right moment. Like, so my thing is like jump in now and just actively look for the deal. Don't wait for the perfect timing.
You said earlier that rents, go up, 2, 3, 4%, which means that the value of the property is going to go up each year. So yeah, waiting, there's never a perfect time. It's always going to cost more tomorrow than it does today. So you've laid that out for us. So COVID-19 and this or that scares people. But especially now, people would be worried about investing in anything in the middle of COVID-19. What would you say to that?
Well, before COVID-19, I know there is like what there was an influenza pandemic, and after COVID-19, I think there will be COVID-20, right? So my point is, think about how you're gonna make it happen instead of making or saying like excuses and saying like why you're not doing this. And I am not just referring to real estate, but to anything and everything. Like if you have a passion in something, just find a way to make it happen, whether it's a pandemic or not. And you need to just constantly and consistently evolve and pivot and adjust yourself.
Awesome. So yeah, you're right. Yeah, before COVID there was something, and after COVID-19 there'll be something else. I like that, COVID-20. There's always going to be something. So yeah, real estate or not, just stay at it. Okay, last thing, how can listeners get in contact with you, and is there anything they can help you with? I think I gave a peg there for finding deals, but is there anything else? And you pay a finder's fee, but is there anything they can help you with, and how can they reach you?
Well, to you can find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, or Instagram. Like I'm very active on social media, so you could just type Yosef Yurbosef. So it's YOSEFYOURBROSEF, and I'll pop up and just network with me. I love to network. I love to share my experience and how and what I did to come to this far, and then. I'm very open. So any questions, I enjoy answering. So just reach out to me and let's be friends, and I'll share what I learned.
There we go. Good. I'm glad you came on the show, Yosef. I asked you what they could do for you, and your answer was what you can do for them. So I like that. That's what this show is all about, just kind of educating and sharing the knowledge about real estate investing and just financial money management with others. So you've definitely added value there, and Look forward to having you back and hearing more about that third deal rather.
Thank you very much, Chris, for having me here. I really enjoyed the conversation. And
Yes,
I
me
think you're the
too.
first one. I didn't do many podcasts, but you're the first one like who really dealt read my posting through and all the comments and created all these questions. And I was very impressed.
All right, awesome. Well, I enjoyed it just as much, and we'll talk with you soon.
Okay, Chris, thank you.
So, you also shared a whole lot, and I hope you got a whole lot out of it like I did. I took a few notes, or quite a few notes actually, but I'm just going to share a few points. I thought it was interesting when Yosef first got started. He first came in touch with real estate actually in his attorney career, and it was via a syndication fund. There was a financial fund from South Korea that was purchasing property all the way in New York City. So the real estate that you live near, or walk by, or drive by, or work at, or maybe even live in, is desirable from people that are far, far away. So, if you're interested in investing in real estate, there's only so much of it. There's only so much land. So, don't wait too long. Yosef mentioned that the area that he is located in, New York, has limited cash flow when it comes to investing in real estate. And as we talked about on the show multiple times, cash flow is very, very, very important when it comes to real estate investing. And it's limited in New York in part because it is a high cost of living area. So if your area is a high cost of living area or has some other aspect of it that doesn't make it desirable for investing in real estate, then don't let that slow you down or stop you or halt you. Do what Yosef did and invest elsewhere. You don't have to reside or be located in the area that you're going to be investing in. At least that's the case for Yosef and many others. In fact, it was 1,200 miles away in Yosef's first investment from where he is right now in New York to where their investment is in Kansas. If you're getting started in investing in real estate, people may not understand what you're doing. People close to you, family, friends, they just may not get it, and that's okay. You can explain it to them if they want to understand or learn, like Yosef did. At least initially, he said. Eventually, he said he stopped and just continued what he was doing, and that's what you should do, and just keep on the path of what you're doing, no matter what you hear or what you don't hear from friends and family. And in his case, he did keep going, and some of them actually joined him. So just keep at it. Now, on to Yosef's deals, and these were awesome deals, slam dunks, we call it kind of in this industry. He was able to raise the value of his property, or he will be able to raise the value of his property just because the rents were so far behind. So a lot of times it's considered awesome if you are able to add value to the property by making renovations or improvements to the property. But in his case, and they'll probably do that too, they probably will add value to the property by making renovations and doing improvements to the property. But he's got the opportunity, and looks like in both of these deals or opportunities or in real estate investments so far, from my notes, to increase the value of the property without doing anything, which is awesome. So, slam dunks. I hope he finds many more properties like that, and he'll continue to be well on his way. Now, speaking of those properties, Yosef did this during COVID-19. So right in the middle of it was one transaction, and hopefully we're on our way out of it. But he has finished another transaction. So don't let that stop you or slow you down, whether you're just getting started in real estate. Like Yosef said, there's no perfect timing. Don't get stuck being a spectator. It's not an on and off thing where you can just jump in when the market is right. I don't know if the market is ever right. As Yosef said, this is COVID-19. There were things that happened before COVID-19. There's going to be things that happen after COVID-19. Hopefully, there's no COVID-20, but I'm sure there will be something. So don't get stuck being on the sideline or a spectator or waiting for the perfect time. I'll tell you that there is no perfect time. The only thing you can guarantee is that the cost to get into real estate investing is going to be more tomorrow than it is today. That is for sure. And you can protect yourself. You don't have to make it a gamble to invest in real estate in the middle of a pandemic or whatever the next thing might be going on in the world, there's precautions you can take. Yosef, for example, chose to be conservative in his rent growth projections. So as you put together your business plan or you look at the business plan of others, if you're investing passively in a real estate investment, he chose to look at rent growth and not project any for a couple years. So that is a conservative measure. So instead of 2 or 3 or 4% rent growth, he showed it as flat, 0%. So that, in his mind, and I would agree, is a way to go about and protecting yourself when it comes to investing in real estate in an economic downturn or in the middle of a pandemic, which this is not quite an economic downturn, but it's been up and down for sure. Now, if you want to get in touch with Yosef, you can reach him just as he said on any of the social media platforms by searching Yosef, your brosef, Yosef, Yourbrosef. I'm showing it on the screen on any of the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn. If you've got questions for the show or you want to get in contact with me, I'm at neelyrealty.com/engage. That's NILEE realty.com/engage. Lastly, and always, if you found this show helpful, share it with someone else, and I'll see them and you back here next time on the It's Attainable Real Estate Investing Show.
You have been listening to the It's Attainable Real Estate Investing Show, sharing transparent knowledge on investing and the powerful impact real estate investing can have on your wealth and lifestyle. Follow or subscribe to the show using your favorite podcast app so you'll know firsthand when a new show is released, or visit neelyrealty.com/podcast and see the show there. That's NILEE realty.com/podcast.